I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. With me today, this morning, in the Blessed Solanus Casey studio, are two other priests of the diocese, Father Garrett Burns.
Hey, hey.
And Father Drew Hoffman.
Are we promoting other dioceses of saints ahead of Capon here?
If we were not promoting other diocese saints, what saints else would we use?
If they're already saints, but the guys are already saints. Like, there is this kind of like rivalry amongst the dioceses of whose guy is going to get canonized first.
Is that how heaven works? I don't know.
That's how human beings work. I'm very familiar with human beings.
You are part of the problem of the church.
That's right. You're not wrong about that. You're not wrong.
Everything is a competition, I'm college chaplain.
I was fighting with somebody at Focus Training about something, and somebody comes up to me and goes, "Have you done a strengths finder?" I think, and they're trying to be real nice about it, like, "I think competitiveness would probably be in yours." And they weren't really meaning it as a compliment. They were.
We've got, so this coming weekend is the Seminary and Weekend of Recollection, and we're doing the Called and Gifted program, which I'm not sure if you're familiar or not, but I think some guys it'll be really good for, some guys it won't speak to as much, but so many lay people in the diocese are using, I want them to have, you know, the language and knowledge. So for the Called and Gifted program, you do an inventory beforehand and it tells you, you know, what your charisms. So I did mine already. So
I wonder what if, I don't know that we're going to be able to guess. I was going to see if we could guess, but I don't even know if I know the index of them.
I'm trying to remember what they were, but it kind of made me laugh a little bit. Celibacy is one of my charisms, so
nailed it.
That was a relief.
Oh, that's so funny.
One of my top charisms.
Congrats to you, man.
Right, I know. Pastoring was another one, so I felt pretty good about that. Teaching, so yeah, I get that. My weak ones, music.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Can't argue there.
I was at your first mass.
I had a moment like you the other day with the Spanish guys. I started doing the hymn for adoration, but it was like 7 a.m. adoration, and I cannot hear even in my head at 7 a.m. And I just got through the first line like, someone else start this. Craftsmanship was a weakness. And then this one made me laugh. I do not have a charism for leadership, according to this inventory.
Oh, no.
So, well, Bishop, if you're listening, we're going to have to rearrange some
things. But he's super celibate, the most celibate man in the whole diocese of Wichita, Chad Arnold.
Super celibate.
What a gift.
It was so revealing, this inventory.
This is great. I had dinner last night with a couple who, that has really changed a lot of their spirituality during the strength.
Yeah.
It just like opened their heart to who they are and lean into some strengths and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So
I think it's a good thing. Yeah, I have to push against my urge a little bit of sometimes can cynicism in. We have theology degrees, and so we've studied a lot of these things, which is a gift and a great advantage. And so it's not as surprising as maybe some people that haven't had the chance to. But I know a lot of lay people, some good friends and things that have done it. And yeah, it's really opened their eyes on how they want to work with the church and how understanding, even just for some people, the idea that, wait, I have gifts, that the Holy Spirit's working through me, which we know because we study that. But for some people, that's hugely important and a great gift. So I think it's a really good program. I don't know if I fully expect it to reveal things to me. Maybe it will. Yeah. Maybe it will. But I think it's a good thing for the guys to know about just because it is so popular in the diocese and helping a lot of people. So anyways, we're doing that this coming weekend or by the time this will have aired. Previous weeks, whatever. I'm not doing
I can't wait to hear what some of these are our boys' gifts are. I cannot wait for this.
Some weaknesses in celibacy.
That'd be a tough scene. Yeah.
See, I'm afraid of that. Yeah. I'm just like, okay, calm down. This is just an online inventory. Right. This doesn't.
And I'm teaching
Totus
Tuus this summer. And I've got low celibacy ratings. Jeepers.
Yeah. I will be curious how that plays out. But back to Solanus Casey. little divergent there.
Okay.
So as always, there's a reason for the saint. I feel like this could be a new segment of the podcast of guess the reason.
Chad's thought process.
Chad's mind. I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, right. So yeah, any guesses why Solanas Casey? You guys know the topics for that. Why Solanas Casey? If music were one of my charisms, I'd do like the Jeopardy theme song right now, but I can't do
this
that.
Is coming out on 4th of July. So because he's That's American good. Blessed.
There we
American
go.
Blessed?
That's what led
America.
Me.
America.
America. And should... Detroit is as America as it gets, baby.
That is true. That is true. Good and bad. Yeah. But yeah, so I figured since this is dropping on July 4th, we should have an American saint, Solanas Casey. And then as my mind works, I start thinking about, well, he could connect to this part of it. He could connect to this part of it. So one of my favorite Solanas Casey stories, and I don't know if I've told it before on the podcast, because I tell it a lot because it cracks me up. So he was a Franciscan friar, doorkeeper up just outside of Detroit. And one of the friars comes to him and asks him to pray for him because he's going to the dentist and he's got a really bad tooth and he needs a miraculous cure. I forget all the background. But so he asks Solanas to pray for him. Solanas says, no problem. Go to the dentist. Woman comes in. It's a hot June day. And she gives Solanas Casey two ice cream cones. And he says, thanks, but he doesn't have time to eat them right now. So he puts them in his desk drawer to the horror of his secretary. He's like, oh gosh, that's going to be such a mess to clean up. So hot day, June, puts two ice cream cones in his desk drawer. The original friar that asked him to pray about his teeth comes back from the dentist and it's been miraculously cured. They can't find the problem anymore. He's fine. He's great. Solanas Casey, well, let's celebrate with ice cream. So he opens up his desk drawer and pulls out not two, but three ice cream cones. They had multiplied in there. They're still perfectly frozen. He hands one to his secretary, one to this guy. This is after several hours in a desk in a hot June day, and they all eat ice cream cones. And it's such a random, non-important miracle. Like his secretary testifies to, like, I just don't understand how God's working in this, but there were more ice cream and it was still perfect, which is just, that's the type of miracle I want to do in my life.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I take back whatever I said earlier on the whatever saint power I want. I just want the ice cream power.
Multiplying ice cream. That's the dream. Way more people would be Catholic if God would give that gift out.
That did not show up on my charism inventory of ice cream multiplying. It's a very appropriate summer miracle. And so one of our topics for today is, what does summer life look like for a priest? So we're summertime. This miracle happened in June. We're recording this in June. That's what summer looks like for Solanas Casey. What does summer look like for you? How's it different from the rest of the year?
Yeah, as with most stuff, everything slows down a little bit. A lot of most parishes, you know, that we're familiar with have a school. And so when that's not going, just the day-to-day is a little easier. Can be a good time to take a vacation or take a retreat. For me personally, that means once a week, it's a lake day. So we throw about 30, 40 kids on an old school bus, say a prayer that it turns on. And once it does, we take them out to a lake all day.
That's the Ned Blick special right there.
Yeah, which has been awesome. I mean, it's fun just to do and the kids love it. And I think it has shown me just for my future pastorate, my future assignments, that I can basically work a day less once a week during the summer and I still get everything done.
It's a good lesson.
Yeah.
My life changes pretty significantly during the summer. Yeah. Everybody's does. And high school chaplains' lives would change more than my life changes. But I'd say it's probably up there in the difference. I don't like leaving during the school year. I don't like doing anything outside of the city limits, really, during the school year. Unless I left for my brother's wedding and maybe for something I did for Focus last year. So I'm kind of around. Because the students are only on campus 34 weeks a year. And it's not like when they're... In the summer, they still maybe come to Sunday Mass or something like that. But a lot of them scatter, or they're, you know, we have a bunch of kids teaching Totus Tuus this summer and doing Focus stuff and things like that. So I don't see them, my main area of focus, during the summer. And so summer is when I do a lot of the things that I've told people no during March, April, and May. And so a lot of dinners, a lot of meals with people, a lot of catching up with stuff. I was on retreat last week. I do the retreat during the summer. Wouldn't do retreat during the school year, really. I was at Focus training. Then a lot of weddings as a college chaplain.
Yeah, right.
I was in Colby. I'm in Dallas this weekend. I have Stillwater, Salina. And so really, really fun. But much more traveling, going on vacation with my family. And then planning as we get into July, ramping up and that's what everybody probably spends time doing during the summer. Okay, what's opening week going to look like? What's going to be our vision? What's our game plan? What's everyone's roles, responsibilities, expectations? Those types of things. So a lot of the stuff I wouldn't do during August to May, I'm able to kind of jam into the summer. And then July 25th, though, for me, is the date. Nothing else gets on the calendar after July 20, 25th, and we'll get rocking and rolling.
How was your retreat?
It was awesome, man. It was so good. I went back to Conception.
Oh, yeah?
Where we went to, where Gary and I went to seminary. Where we all went to seminary. We've talked about Conception a decent amount. I had only been once in the last 9 years since I graduated.
Wow.
And Gary and I were texting about this. Just nothing had changed. and it was cool. It was cool because 9 years later, and the monks all came and talked to me and chatted, and so many memories and places I used to walk and pray. And Conception wasn't always my favorite place in the world at all. But it was so formative. It was really an emotional experience. It was great. And I'm going to go more often. And I told my staff, actually, when I got home, I sent an email to all my staff. You have 3 free days this year to go to Conception. You don't have to take vacation. Don't have to. If you want to go to Conception, and if they want to go somewhere else, that'd be fine too. But that's how formative it was.
That's a cool
idea.
And
I think it would be good for the staff. Mm-hmm. Just sneak out. You're gone. Come back. It was great.
Yeah. If you've never been, I mean, it is an overpowering experience. It's in the middle of nowhere in this just beautiful basilica and just the monks around. It's like stepping into a different time and place if you've never done it before. It leaves an impression.
People just walking in the evenings, the monks walking together and then working with their chickens and the bees and walking around the lake and things like that. It's really a nice guest houses and stuff like that. So you kind of get to, you can have some comfort, and it's great.
That part has changed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It was not nice guest house when I was there as a seminarian, but yeah, they've remodeled that and it's good.
Yeah, worth the trip.
Yeah. Cool.
What does your summer look like?
So I am kind of an anomaly. My summer actually gets busier. Yeah. So yeah, like you guys were saying in the parish and as a high school chaplain, a lot of times the summer was more downtime. You had more relaxed time with the kids. Like you were saying, Gare, on the lake day, you know, I used to do a lot of that. But as vocation director, it actually flops around. So I travel less during the summer, which is nice. During the school year, I'm visiting colleges, I'm visiting theologates. And so I don't have to do that. So I'm actually home more often probably during the summertime. But it's busier because all the guys are back. All the seminarians are back. We're finishing up the applicants for the next year in that time. The theologians are back. I'm checking in on all of their assignments to see how they're doing and running reviews with that. Every other year, this summer included, we do a local Spanish immersion program. So the house isn't even empty. We just have 13 guys living here. And so I do Spanish mass for them a couple times a week. And then kind of they're at other parishes during part of it. Guys meet girls during Totus Tuus. There's always a few of those conversations that happen in the summertime.
I gave the Totus Tuus talk. Don't leave during the summer. I did it in a cemetery to even add a level of intensity to it.
How did you tie that in?
I said, you will end up here if you leave. I promise you.
So yeah, I just had a priest the other day ask me, so like, you just sleep all day during the summertime? I'm like, no, it's actually the opposite. My life gets just as busy or busier during the summertime. It is less regimented. So like in the school year, you know, we have mass every day at this time, holy hour every day at this time, dinner at every time. And so that's where the relaxation part of summer for me is. There's just as much going on, but it's not as regimented. So yeah, if I want to stay in the office and work a little later, I can do that because I don't have to be back at the house at 4:00. If I want to do my holy hour in the morning on some days, I can do that. Whereas during the school year, since I'm praying and with the guys, I don't have that liberty. So it's less regimented, but it's actually just as busy or more busy. I found out, so in the Diocese of Wichita, every Friday night, we have Fridays of Formation, which we kind of take for granted. We're used to, we get together with all the guys, mass, evening prayer, dinner, talk, and social. I just kind of assumed most places did that. But to my knowledge, we may be one of the more involved programs of a diocese in the summertime for our seminarians. I don't know if that's true, but
that was the sense I always got in seminary, that no other guys were like, oh, wow, you get together every week.
Not on a weekly basis. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, they were jealous of it. Guys were jealous of it.
Yeah, the guys, I generally, you know, they may complain a little bit, oh, I got to go this Friday, but they like it. There's beer, there's soda, there's hanging out, there's games.
Ben cooks.
Ben cooks.
My hospitality guy cooks at St. Paul.
And he is a fantastic cook. Yeah,
he does a great job.
I don't even remember what we had last week, but it was good. Like, I don't think I've ever had a bad meal by Ben. He's one of those guys that enjoys it.
He loves it.
He loves cooking. He does great.
We usually go hang out at Bishop's house, which I know when I was in seminary, that was big of just little by little as you grow up and get up through theology. It's like the bishop starts to become less of like this guy up there on a pedestal. Mm-hmm. But, and then once you're kind of a deacon and ready to be a priest, it's like, I'm more of a coworker with you right now because I have a little bit of I have these 7 summers where I've been talking with you and hanging out, maybe having dinner with you, that it's less of an intimidating thing by the time you're getting ordained, which is great.
Right. I'm very grateful to Bishop Kemi and before him, Bishop Jakels, that they spend time with the guys. That's another thing that's maybe not always other bishops in other dioceses either don't have the time or the availability, but Bishop Kemi loves coming over here during the school year for lunch with the college guys. He likes when he's in town for us to come over on Friday's formation, hang out at his place and drink and sit around the fire and fish and those things. So and he shows up at our day at the lake and all of those things. So he does a really good job of just knowing the guys personally and allowing them to know him personally, which is, like I said, it's really awesome, and we maybe take it for granted, but it's not the norm out there, I don't think.
Absolutely not. It's a gift. It's really a gift for the Diocese of Wichita.
Well, another way, Solanus Casey, he's the saint that keeps on giving, or the blessed that keeps on giving. So he was the perfect choice because it's July 4th. He's the perfect choice because he does summertime miracles. He's also a great choice for our main topic today because he was what was known as a priest simplex, something we don't have anymore, but there was a time in church history where some men would be ordained priests, but they were not maybe deemed intelligent enough, book smart enough to hear confessions or to preach. They would be allowed to like say mass, but they weren't allowed to do the homily. They weren't allowed to hear confessions. And there were probably some other restrictions on that, but they were known as priest simplex. St. John Vianney famously was originally a priest simplex when he was first ordained. The man who was known for hearing confessions wasn't allowed to hear confessions when he was ordained. But Blessed Solanus Casey was also a priest simplex, which I didn't realize until I was researching him a little bit. And so as priest simplex in the friary, he was given the job of doorkeeper, which is one of the more maybe simple jobs, is he greets people when they come and go and gets fetches things as they're needed. But he also became a friar of great holiness. And really, he grew in that holiness by doing the most simple of things, being a doorkeeper, of sanctifying that super ordinary, super simple. It's not what we think of when we think of a great and marvelous thing, but he sanctified that, and that was part of his path in holiness. I think all of us probably have within ourselves, there's this desire to do something great for the church, something great for God, to do these, you know, big and glorious and wonderful acts. But so much of holiness is the day-to-day grind, is the small things. And so when a guy is discerning, a lot of times he's thinking about seminary, he's thinking of priesthood as kind of this big thing, and I'm going to be holy when I do this, I'm going to do this some days down the line. And part of the healthy discernment and part of healthy growth for them is bringing their vision down to the right now moment. Okay, maybe you will be a priest someday, maybe you will be in seminary today, but it starts now in sanctifying all the unglamorous things of your day right now. And so that's where I want to bring our main topic today, is just kind of looking at what that means to make the mundane holy and how important that is and how that plays into a man's discernment.
Yeah, for me, it makes me think of right away, so many times I'll be talking to the kids, high schoolers, and they're just like frustrated with school or whatever. And they're like, you know, when am I ever going to use quadratic functions in my life or whatever? Why do I have to know math? Why do I have to do this stuff? And it's like, okay, maybe you're right that you're not going to use quadratic functions, whatever job you're going to do in the future, but you're like forming the kind of person you're going to be, that just when you have something to do, you're going to do it and you're going to do it well.
I like that.
I could see that too. In seminary, sometimes it's like, well, I don't need no philosophy, or why do I do all this different stuff? Or in discernment, or like, no, I don't want to do this stuff. I want to be like, yeah, like you said, like the heroic big time saint. And it's like, the only way you know that you're going to actually do that is if you go to school and you obey your parents and you show up to prayer and you just do these daily things and get back to the grind and keep doing it. And that's how you get to that actual heroic sanctity. So
it's like emotional muscle memory.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to do the work. I'm used to it. I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah, like every team in the world has these, well, sports teams have these very specific rules, even about like how long your socks can be and how, what color you wear and when you show up to things and stuff like that. It's like, who cares, you know, when you're on a freshman football team, how long your socks are or what kind of shoes you're wearing or things like that. But if you can't do that right, how are you in the biggest moments going to be trusted to do the big things? It's like Bishop Jakels, the previous bishop, refused to allow the seminarians to have beards, right? And we were all celebrated when Bishop Kemi, we saw that he had a beard
when he first showed up.
And different bishops do things different ways, great. But that was at least his thought process there, was if you can't be obedient regarding the beard, how are you going to be obedient when I ask you to move to a different parish that you don't want to really want to go to? Mm. And so there is that. I like that muscle memory. You know what comes to mind is our friend Brian Bergkamp. And Brian was a seminarian for the Diocese of Wichita who passed away saving somebody in the Arkansas River one day in a kayaking accident. Well, what came to, I think, a lot of our hearts and minds there, he did this big, this heroic sacrificial thing. Bri did a lot of little things. He just was disciplined with little things, doing little things that when he woke up, how he served, how he, when you asked him to do something, he did it and he followed through. So he had practiced his whole life. I want to be a saint, a martyr in the big moment. If I haven't practiced that my whole life, then why would I expect in the biggest moment to do that well? And Bri, I thought, was a good example for us of that.
I hadn't thought of him as an example of that, but yeah, that's true. It's those little things that used to drive me nuts when I was in seminary. Like, just like you said, why does it care what color my socks are? What does that matter? And my own personalities, my own charisms and weakness fights against those mm-hmm. things and struggles with those things. But by the very fact that I struggle with them, I also know that that's my path to holiness. That's where I've got to be. The one time I ever got a real come to Jesus talking to with Bishop Jakels was he had the rule, no facial hair, which when that rule was made, there were only two seminarians who had facial hair.
No way.
There were only two seminarians.
Did you feel personally attacked?
I did, because one of them was Father Adam Kider, who had a very tasteful goatee, well-trimmed, it looked that. And then there was me.
Yeah.
And my facial hair was less tasteful. Yeah. So I did feel like it was a little bit of a pointed rule at That's that funny. Stage in life. But the one time I kind of had a talking to from Bishop Jakels, I was sent to Mexico to study Spanish. And I went down there and I didn't pack a razor. I don't really remember if it was intentional or not, but I figured, I'm in Mexico. What does it matter? And so I grew a beard in Mexico, probably my first ever beard as an adult. I'm like, well, I'll just shave it when I get home. No big deal. Bishop Jakels was waiting for us at the airport when we got off the plane.
I hadn't heard that story before.
And so it's one of those you walk through there. I'm like, oh, no, this is a problem. And it was. Yeah. And he took me aside later and said, this is a small thing, Chad. If you can't do this, how do I know I can trust you to do the bigger things? And it was, and I was apologetic, and I see the point of it more so now maybe than I did then. But that was one of the one times Bishop Jakels really just called me on the carpet is when I came back from Mexico with a beard. Now, the moment I was ordained, I threw my razor away. And I can count on like one hand the number of times I've been clean shaven since I was ordained.
That's funny.
But now, one of the scripture passages that comes to mind with this idea of making holy the mundane that I like to bring up with high school guys, with college guys, with seminarians, it's a very unglamorous passage, but it's hard hitting. It's from the book of Samuel, and it says, obedience is better than sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And so many times, well, in Lent, I'm going to give this up. I'm going to do, what's the program? Exodus 90. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, that's good. Are you being obedient to your parents? Are you being obedient to these? Well, no. Okay, then don't do that other stuff. Focus. Obedience is better than sacrifice. It's a passage I have to remind myself of a lot of times just because, frankly, obedience oftentimes is harder than sacrifice. Well, I'm asked to do this. It's precisely because I don't see the wisdom in being asked to do that, or precisely because I don't want to do that, makes obedience all the harder, which makes it a much greater gift to the Lord to be able to give because I don't agree, and not on a moral sense, not on like this is wrong, but just I would do this differently if I were... Okay, then this is precisely an opportunity to really bend my will, or as St. Teresa of Avila would say, to do violence to my own will so that I can grow in holiness.
Yeah, I was been reading some Mother Teresa, and she talks about that. It's a lot of her speeches and letters to the sisters as she was forming them and everything. And it was one similar to that of one sister, you know, wanted to do some extreme fast or... And she said, better to eat what is sweet and is given to you today, and then also eat what is bitter and is given to you tomorrow. So it reminds me of Totus Tuus. Like, there was kind of that general rule of eat what is set before you, of like whatever the family cooks, then you're going to eat it. And that's if it. You like it or not, it's kind of out of respect to them. And I think that's just a good general rule for life in a grander terms than obviously what we're eating, of just what the day has before you and the task. Just eat that, complete that. Do whatever God is asking you to do. He's working in and through that. So
that's really good. Next time something annoying happens, eat this.
Eat this.
This is what I'm going to hear God saying in the back. Eat it. Eat it. Okay.
That Weird Al song.
Yeah.
I took, we drove to Bismarck for focus training. I took Father Matt David and Father Gail Hammerschmidt on a adventure of Weird Al songs. A long trip through. They thought we were just doing one or two. We did an extended.
Are you a Weird Al fan?
Big Weird Al fan.
I did not know that.
Big Weird
He's
Al
He's coming
fan.
To Wichita.
I know. I'm well aware. It's in September.
Drew requested it. He's the one that sent, he kind of got everything going. So he
I'm
talked
big
to the
Weird
city.
Al. Big Weird Al.
I mean, I like him. I mean, he's a very intelligent man, but yeah, I would not have guessed.
For our listeners, I'd listen to Amish Paradise, Star Wars The Saga Begins, and then Trapped in the Drive-Thru. Give it some time, 10-minute song, but an electric factory of a trip to the drive-thru.
I don't know if I know that last one.
Oh, you're in for a treat on your drive away from here today.
Well, I know what I'm eating today.
Yeah. It is, one of my favorite passages has become, and maybe I've talked about it on the podcast, the conversion of St. Paul, being at St. Paul's. Because we have an image of the conversion of St. Paul right down the aisle from me. But what I actually like the best about that story these days, at this point in my spiritual life, when Ananias he hears God's voice, and he says, "Here I am, Lord," which is the traditional, like, anything you want, Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Lord is like, "Hey, I need you to go find the one breathing murderous threats." Ananias is like, "I don't want to do that. That's not what you can't have meant that for me to do, actually." And that being how the greatest evangelizer of all time comes into the church. And so you're exactly right. How often I want to be a saint, but I'm not going to be patient on my drive home from here with the people. Like, that can't be how I become a saint. And so can I name some of those areas? Can I name some of those areas that I don't want to be a saint in that little small thing? And then keep an eye on it. Ignatius would have his men mark down how many times they messed up that one specific thing in a day, just so that they got not in shame, but they got habit of that. Okay, that could be maybe a helpful thing. These little monotonous daily things, how often they happen. Because if I let the dust build up there, bigger stuff is going to happen down the line.
I like that idea. I want to sit with that in the holy hour. Just the simple thought, areas I don't want to be a saint in. Like, I feel like that could be a really rich conversation with the Lord in the holy hour. Okay, what are the... Because I know the areas I want to be a saint
absolutely.
In. Those are easy. But the areas I don't want to be a saint in, those are probably the areas I need to direct my energy and my intentional efforts towards. You know, Thérèse of Lisieux talks about she wanted to do something great for the church, which I love that she can own that desire. Because there's sometimes this idea of, like, out of a sense of humility, we don't speak those desires. I think most people probably have them, but we don't maybe speak them into the air.
No, don't look at me. Don't ever think about me.
But even Thérèse of Lisieux is like, I want to do something amazing for God and for the church. I want to do something great for it. But then she realized, but I'm also a sickly nun in a Carmel. What great things are open to me? And she has the great realization, the greatest thing I can do for the church is to become holy. And I have to direct all of my will in every little way. And that's the whole idea of the little way that comes out of it is I want to do something great for God, for the church too. And the greatest thing that I can do is become holy. And then that she begins to sanctify all the little moments of the day, which for any of our discerners out there, summer is maybe the ideal time to focus on this is, okay, yeah, your day is maybe a little less regimented than usual, but don't think, well, I'm going to become holy when I'm in seminary. I'm going to be holy when I'm going to be there. No, it starts right now. Maybe I'm not in spiritual direction, or maybe I'm not studying philosophy, but you can work on being charitable to the person across the table from you. You can be work at, okay, mom and dad are gone. I'm going to pick up the house, or I'm going to do whatever needs to be, or I hate working at McDonald's, but I'm going to do a good day's work here. It's sanctifying that ordinary and making those things holy that truly progress us towards holiness and then will allow us to see the Lord on a fuller level, which will ultimately help our discernment there. But it starts, if you're discerning, it starts now with sanctifying the day-to-day tasks.
And doing those things fully, that's one of the things that keeps coming out as I've been reading Mother Teresa. A word she likes to use is, she says, sisters never do anything slapdash.
Slapdash.
Which to me is like halfway, doing things halfway. But she says, yeah, just do things wholeheartedly. So yeah, like you said, cleaning up the house or working at McDonald's or just doing your prayer, praying your rosary today, do that thing wholeheartedly in a heroic way almost. And that's how you become a heroic saint in these little things, doing small things with extraordinary love, you know, the St. Thérèse thing, but just doing things wholeheartedly and not in a slapdash. Well, I guess I technically did it and I was obedient according to the letter of the law. I did what my parents said. I got the thing done. that's slapdash. And so do it wholeheartedly. And that's how you'll become holy.
In Screwtape Letters, C.S. Lewis utilizes the demon that's teaching another demon. Says, if you can get humans to think about, first off, best to think about the past, second best to think about the future. Because the past doesn't have God in it, is kind of the way he words it. Mm-hmm. Because it's already occurred. Like, it's already happened. It's back there. It's not reality anymore. Okay, so if you can get humans there, great. If you can get them into the future, not as good, but still good. Because God will be there eventually, but it'll be different than the way he's thinking. But it's like there is still a possibility of reality. What you can't have is humans think about the present. That's the nightmare for a demon, because that's the moment reality and God collide. And that's the scariest moment for the evil one, when a human is focused on where reality and God come together, which only occurs in the present.
A discernment starts in the present, eating whatever is put before us, and looking at the areas where I don't want to be a saint and working to make those holy. That's where discernment starts. And I think that's where we will stop for today. So thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. Father Garrett has the final word today.
Perhaps unsurprisingly from what I've been talking about today, but this comes from Mother Teresa. You want to know how much you love Jesus? There's no need to ask anybody to tell you. You will know it. Do you practice silence? Are you obedient to your superiors?
See you next week.